This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Roddy Jones is here. Mark's on the road to recovery. We hope to have him back very soon. Appreciate Roddy being here today and tomorrow. If we are going to release the official preseason ACC football poll at 9 o'clock, this is the official ACC football inside hour, because David Hale's getting ready to join us, and then David Teal, bottom of the hour, right? And then we'll get official preseason poll, and then we'll get some official analysis. Andrea Adelson will be here in the 9 o'clock hour as well. But let's go to Charlotte, and David Hale joins us. I've been waiting to say this for weeks. Long time no see, Mr. Hale. It's been since Thursday. last time you and I spoke, it didn't have anything to do with ACC football. It had everything to do with the potential of Oklahoma and Texas going to the SEC. And our buddy Matt Fortuna, the Athletic, was scratching his head going, I don't know. I don't know. How's this going to work? I don't know. So let's go there first, and then we'll get to some kickoff takeaways. Roddy and I spent a few minutes on realignment in the first hour. Anything of note in the last 48 to 72 you think we ought to keep an eye on moving forward this week as it relates to the plate tectonics of college athletics?
I would have, if you had asked me about this on Monday of last week, I would have said, no, what's there to worry about? Everything's fine. No, the world moves fast. It's funny. I talked to one AD over the weekend and I said, well, isn't it wise to take a step back and kind of let this percolate for a few minutes and kind of regroup and figure out where you are? And he said, yeah, that's the wise thing. But the funny thing about college sports is a lot of times we'd rather do dumb and fast rather than smart and slow. So who knows is the answer here. I think you're going to see something closer to official from Texas and Oklahoma as early as today. It won't be, hey, we're joining the SEC, it's a done deal. But it will be, hey, we're not going to sign on to a new group grant of rights with the Big 12 and sort of the first domino in making that official. Where things go from here is anybody's guess. And there are some places, I know if you're UCF or Cincinnati and schools like that, they're saying, look, chaos may be good for us as leagues try to expand. I think it's funny with the ACC, the thing that was sort of talked about as its biggest liability, which was this long-term TV contract that was not in the neighborhood of where the SEC is likely to be, might be its best asset right now, because the grant of rights for their schools is locked in for so long at this point that they don't really have to worry about poaching. So I think what you're seeing with Jim Phillips right now particularly is trying to take a more measured approach and say, like, all right, where are we at right now? How do we get to where we want to be and stay on at least something approaching an even keel with what this madness that is supposed to be the new SEC is going to be?
David, I think a lot of people automatically jump to, all right, you got to get Notre Dame in. And there's been a lot of talk about the pressure that this could put on Notre Dame to join the ACC. You had a long thread yesterday that was a fascinating read about what Notre Dame has done to try and solidify itself. In your opinion, does this force Notre Dame to make a move to join a conference, or are they still fine with independence no matter how this shakes out?
Yeah, it was a long Twitter thread. It's like if Tolstoy was on Twitter, that's what this would have been, except not as well written.
It was like 30-something tweets. I mean, this was legit.
Well, listen, hey, you have paid this subscription fee to follow me on Twitter. Wait, no, I'm giving this away for free. Why am I doing this? I don't know. I think that the Notre Dame situation is really misunderstood. And for one, people were talking about, hey, maybe the Pac-12 or the Big Ten go after Notre Dame. And I'm not saying that's impossible. I'm saying that Notre Dame is locked into the same basic framework of an agreement as every other ACC school. They are contractually obligated that if they join a conference, it has to be the ACC. And that's through the term of the same grant of rights, which runs through 2036. So it wouldn't be quite as expensive for Notre Dame to get out of that as it would be for, say, Clemson to get out of it. But it would be a really high number that makes it very unlikely that they're going somewhere else. What would it take to get them to join the ACC? I was told there's really three things that matter to Notre Dame in the big picture, and none of those three are money. The first is playoff access. Well, if they're expanding to 12, This is more access than they've ever had. The second is a home for their Olympic sports. And frankly, they've got that with the ACC, and they don't need to do anything about it. And then lastly, they just need to know philosophically, is this what we're doing? We have a place to put our games on TV. Yes. Our fans are happy. Yes. That's good. So they're really in a position where I think they're quite happy being independent. And while a lot of us are talking about, well, the landscape is changing. Yeah, the landscape could change to a point where it affects Notre Dame to a point that they have to join a league. That's not going to be the next domino to fall, though. It'll probably be the last domino to fall.
All right, David, I want to go back to what you said about Jim Phillips and being prudent in this and being not slow, but let's call it deliberate, right? Because he's brand new. He's 200 sub 200 days on the job here. The idea that Jim Phillips is going to come in, here comes this, bomb from Oklahoma and Texas. And as I said at the top of the show, Texas has been looking for a get-out card for a long time. You know that, back to DeLoss Dodds' days. Oklahoma is just the running mate, if you will, in this, because those are the two top guns in the Big 12. That being said, the ACC does have this entry point with Notre Dame, and you're right. The two things or the three things that Notre Dame cares about, if the playoff, and I'm just going to speculate, okay? If the playoff is proposed not to be 12 and to be 8, in your mind, does that change Notre Dame?
I think it does. And a lot of this is sort of a funny conversation I was having with a few people over the weekend that this sort of have to back up a little bit, because the 12-game playoff proposal in many ways is authored by Greg Sankey. And then you start to realize why 12 is so important to him, because it would be really hard to even convince Texas and Oklahoma to give up a relatively easy path to the playoff in the Big 12 to enter a very, very difficult one in the SEC. So 12 is important to Greg Sankey in making all of this work. So what happens, because this is not official yet, what happens if everybody sort of bands together and says, we're not into 12 anymore, and we go in a different direction? Well, that could certainly start forcing different dominoes to fall in ways that are not expected right now. Right now, a lot of the decision-making and the thought process is about kind of the assumption that it will stay 12. And maybe it will. There's still a lot of money in 12 for everyone, not just the SEC. The SEC benefits more than everyone else, but there's still a good bit of money in it for the other leagues. So a lot of this is just, I think, and this is one of the things I was talking about with folks over the weekend, is that if this was up to Greg Sankey, this news would have leaked in October, not in July, because in September they've got this big meeting where this could have been effectively approved. And now there's probably a little more doubt about what the future looks like. And yes, if it's 8 and you're essentially putting in conference champions and limiting what it means to be a non-conference champion into the playoff, Notre Dame then has to make some decisions. Because again, when you look at that priority list, playoff access is right at the top of it.
David, you wrote that there were ADs in this league that anticipated the league at some point going after Oklahoma and Texas. So there were people in this league already thinking that you needed to expand potentially to 16 teams. So where does the league go in terms of number? If this does go through, can the league survive as a 14-team league, or will the league want to be a 14-team league? Or what's the number? Will it go to 15 potentially without Notre Dame, or does it try and get to 16 football members whether or not Notre Dame jumps in?
Right, so this is a great question too. I think The big part of this sort of calculus that is very difficult to define, is it's not just what makes the pie bigger, because adding teams is going to make the pie bigger. It's what makes the individual slices of that pie bigger. So if you're dividing by 16 instead of 14, the pie has to be incrementally bigger so that it is more money. But there's also a matter of sort of sway and power and negotiating ability, because now you're dealing with this behemoth SEC that has all of this power to suck all the oxygen out of the room. So growing in some sense is about having more leverage. Growing in another sense is about having more money. Ideally, you want to have both of those things. So which teams fit the bill? Obviously, Notre Dame does. I think that's why that is the discussion point and where it starts. Then you're asking, are there other teams? Now, look, could you go to Texas A&M and say, hey, you're real angry about what just happened here. Why don't you come our way? I don't think that's likely. Could you go to Penn State and say, look, regionally, you make more sense with the ACC, and then you can recruit the South, and you've always been second banana to Ohio State and Michigan. Is a sales pitch, but I don't think it's one that works because you're still asking Penn State to probably take less money than what the Big Ten's in store for. So then you ask, well, who's after that? And you're probably into a tier where you're talking Cincinnati, UCF, West Virginia, Oklahoma State. Those programs may have more value, but they're really not sort of the type of places that is going to short-term change the dynamic or change the narrative very much, and more importantly, change the bottom line dollars. I think there's a lot of upside long-term if you look at a place like UCF that has a young and huge alumni base and student enrollment. But most of the time when you're talking about these decisions, you're talking about how it affects you over the next 4 to 5 years, not what it means for you 10, 15 years down the road.
All right. I want to add two things here about schools you mentioned in the last conversation, just because I want to be fair in the way we speculate here, right? Because that's the kind of way this works. Or at least we try to make it work that way so we don't put incredibly just abstract information out there. Number one, this is being done by all accounts. David, correct me if I'm wrong. This is being done at both Austin and in Norman at the very highest levels. This is not Chris Del Conte at Texas and Joe Castiglione at Oklahoma crafting something on a cocktail napkin and slipping it off to Greg Sankey. This is being done by presidents and chief executive officers all across those respective institutions. Second part of this, whenever Penn State and West Virginia are mentioned in connection to the ACC, I'm just going to say this because I want it on the record. The president of Penn State is the former Florida State president, Chancellor Eric Barron, who used to be in Tallahassee. Clemson president Jim Clements is the former chancellor at West Virginia. I'm just going to say that because that is a working knowledge situation, and those fan bases probably know that. But nonetheless, I want to share that because some of the other folks in the ACC footprint might not know it. Let's pivot to football on that. David, you came away from Charlotte 2.5 days of following the ACC. Roddy just picked Pitt to finish second behind Miami and Carolina third in his preseason poll. Have you got a surprise team for us here after 2 days of listening to coaches and players? And he's already shaking his head at Roddy.
I can't believe Roddy's trying to take over my seat on the pit bandwagon. It's like it's speed where he's just like shoving me out of the driver's seat. Come on, Roddy, I'm the pit guy here. Why are you setting
yourself
up?
No. I'm jumping in the passenger seat. You're the driver. I'm jumping in the passenger seat just to ride along with you because I enjoy our company so much.
All right. I think if I'm talking about a surprise team, and I think, frankly, we've talked a lot about how the ACC, Clemson, and everybody else, that's sort of the tagline that it's been for a few years. I think everybody else is in a better position than they've been in the ACC probably since 2016. The everybody else is good this year. So I think you could probably point to a number of teams, whether it's Pitt, whether it's Virginia Tech, whether it's Virginia, whether it's Wake Forest, Boston College. I mean, these are, if you told me any of them ended up in a really good spot at the end of the year, I wouldn't be surprised. But the one I'm going to lean on is Louisville because, to me, I look at it, it's a team that is returning a lot of talent. The defense has improved by leaps and bounds over the last 2 years. I think is really at a point that's sort of culminating in where they want to be. And then they've got an established quarterback. They've got a lot of cool, interesting, outside-the-box skill position talent. I think they've got a smart coach in Scott Satterfield. But the biggest thing to me is they had horrible luck last year. Whatever could have gone wrong last year went wrong. I think luck is the thing that does not translate year to year. So bad luck tends to get seen on one side, and then it switches back in the other direction, sort of a regression to the mean, if you will. I think a lot of the things, when the ball bounced away from Louisville last year, it bounces back to them this year. So I think that was probably a team that deserved to be around 500 or a game over last year. I think that should be the starting point with them this year. But I think if things go right, they have a chance to be a lot better, and you could be talking about maybe a 9 or even 10-win team.
Roddy?
I am high on Louisville as well for those exact same reasons. You look at them on a statistical play-by-play basis, and it's about the same as they were the year before. The difference, the big difference, was turnovers. Okay, so you talked to us about who the surprise team is. Who's your pick in the Coastal? How do you see the Coastal shaking out? I just told you where mine is. How did you vote?
I know I'm just like following the pack right now, but I shouldn't use pack in this pick in the same sentence, but Carolina's my pick. Look, man, I know last year everybody was super high on North Carolina, and I said, pump the brakes. It's a little too early on it. This year, I don't think it's too early. I think that the pieces are in place. You have the best quarterback in the league in Sam Howell. I think you have probably maybe the most exciting defensive player in the league in Tony Grimes. They're really improved up front on both sides of the ball, and that was sort of a mixed bag for them. And people keep pointing out, well, you know, look at the skill position guys that they lost. It's Phil Longo's offense. It's Carolina. They are loaded with skill position guys. Josh Downs is going to become a superstar, household name this year. Ty Chandler is going to be just fine in the backfield. I'm not worried about them getting their yards on offense. I think what to watch is see how they develop in the trenches, pass rush on the defensive side, pass blocking on the offensive side. If those things are improved at an incremental level from last year, I think they're easily the best team in the Coastal. And look, are they as good as Clemson? Probably not, but they only need to be as good as Clemson for one day at the end of the year here in Charlotte. And I don't think that's out of the question either.
Ah, interesting. By the way, Tony Grimes got his NIL on this weekend on Franklin Street in Chapel Hill, signing his own apparel. I mean, I love where this is going with some of these guys and the apparel stuff they've come out with. David, give me your biggest takeaway, maybe something that surprised you for the 2 days in Charlotte here before we let you go.
Well, first off, I'm waiting for the West Durham apparel deal to come through because I need my West gear. I will say the team that probably or the takeaway that I probably had from media days where I came away thinking maybe I'm turning my head around on this team a little bit was Florida State, and you know, Jermaine Johnson was really a big part of that. Boy, that guy is impressive. I mean, he came in, this is a guy who's coming from Georgia who knows what it is to play at the highest level, who understands what success is, and he came in and is at least saying the right things, like, look, I see the same level of talent in my locker room. I think we can win. I know what it takes to win, and there's enough here to do it. We have the pieces. We've got to put them together. I don't know if it's true. Florida State has a long road back to being where they used to be, but just sort of believing in that way is a big, big improvement over what the last couple of years have been. I mean, last year was just misery in Tallahassee, and it was palpable that there is a different approach and a different feeling. And then you add in somebody like Mackenzie Milton, who has won at the highest levels and is as good and accomplished a quarterback as there is in college football. The dynamic and the culture in that locker room at Florida State has been the thing that has needed to change as much as anything. And I think you can really get a sense that that's starting to happen.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Last one for me, David.
Go ahead, Roddy.
Just really quick. Oh, sorry, Wes. Oh, no, this is just going to be really quick. No, I always like to keep track of who's mad at David Hale on Twitter. So David, which fan base is the most mad at you right now?
This is a good question. So we've been a lot of realignment folks right now, a lot of realignment discussion, and we've gotten away from what people are mad at. So right now, I think I actually have Notre Dame fans on my side because I've explained why independence is likely to stay for them. This is a weird dynamic for me. People are saying like, hey, Hale knows what he's talking about. I don't know how to feel about this. I'm a little worried. The next shoe has got to drop. I'm going to say something very dumb. Let's start the countdown. If somebody's not mad at me by the end of the day today, Roddy, I need you to let me know, and I'll work a little harder.
Who's mad at David Hale on Twitter? You know what? I'm beginning to believe that this fall we might have to have a little tote board every week. Check in on who's mad at David Hale on Twitter this week.
I think so.
That is awesome. Oh,
I love it. Awesome. I love it.
Yes, so do we. Thanks as always. Appreciate it. Stay well. We'll see you soon, okay?
Thanks, guys. Good to see you.
You bet. David Hale on ESPN.com. You can read all of his stuff from Charlotte last week, in addition to some of the stuff that was written, ironically, by he and Andrea Adelson, Adam Rittenberg, and others, relating to realignment 10 years later, Roddy. And then all of a sudden, what burst Wednesday afternoon? Realignment. You know, there you go. Don't forget,
very timely article there.
Very timely. Thank you. Yes. We're back to normal on ACC Network this week. That means tomorrow night, another edition of In Play is set for you. Kelsey Riggs and EJ Manuel scheduled for a fast moving half hour. They'll put their own unique spin on the biggest stories from around the league tomorrow night, 8 o'clock right here on ACC Network. When we come back, 36 career starts under his belt. Kenny Pickett, in case you missed it, with Kelsey and myself last Wednesday in Charlotte, right after this on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on the Monday edition. Roddy Jones in for Mark this morning. Thanks to David Hale. David Teal coming up in about, seven, 8 minutes. Last Wednesday, Kenny Pickett came by Roddy to visit with Kelsey and myself. 36 career starts, and he looked to be okay, but I started the interview by asking him quite simply, you still upset after being jerked from the spring game after just three snaps?
Yeah, I forgave him. We'll see September 4th. I hope they keep me in there the whole time. So as long as I'm in there for that game, I'll be all right.
I think the chances are pretty good that they're probably yeah. planning on doing that. Kenny, we heard just in that piece right there the decision that you made to come back. It's something that I'm sure you've talked about endlessly today. Tell us kind of the mindset of that and then just the opportunity now to have another shot at this thing, and I'm sure you feel like with some unfinished business.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it was a really tough decision. Up until about 24 hours, I sent the tweet out. I was ready to go to the NFL, so it was a long week, a lot of phone calls, a lot of discussions with my coaches and my teammates, and at the end of the day, I was really excited about the team we have coming back, and like you said, I think there's a lot of unfinished business, and we have a lot of talent coming back, so I'm excited.
All right, let's go back to you and Mark Whipple, the offensive coordinator, who's got vast NFL experience having this conversation. And let's be honest, where you rank in career numbers at the University of Pittsburgh, you've got a chance to be kind of right there. Now, he told us that he mentioned Dan Marino in the conversation to you. That, I mean, you can have numbers that are only eclipsed by somebody like Dan Marino and maybe even some that you crack on Marino. How much does the future investment conversation with Mark Whipple mean to you in that decision?
Yeah, that meant a lot. I mean, he brought an aspect to the conversation I really haven't thought about prior to him coming to me with it. So, hearing my name mentioned with Dan Marino and seeing my name on the walls with Dan Marino and as a young kid coming into the University of Pittsburgh, that's just what you strive for. You want to have your career be half as good as his, and you'll be in good shape. So, I'm nothing but grateful for the opportunities I've had here in this upcoming season.
Most experienced quarterback in the ACC with 36 career starts. One thing that nobody had last year was a spring season, and you've got it this year. How much have you enjoyed having that back, giving you some perspective as you've getting back in the swing of things with your guys and gotten ready for this season?
Yeah, I mean, the spring is all about continuity and building that, chemistry amongst your teammates and with the wide receivers, the offensive line, all the guys I'll be working with. So it was really good to get back into some normalcy, have a full spring, have a full summer, and obviously, fall camp coming up. So, we'll be ready to go.
Kenny, I look at these numbers, pass yards, total offense, 300-yard games, rushing touchdowns. But I know you want to win, man.
Yeah.
Bottom line is you came back not only to maybe do some of this stuff, but you guys want to win.
Absolutely. I mean, I think if we win a championship, all those, records will, take care of itself. So, that's been on my mind since I decided to come back was, bringing a championship back to Pittsburgh.
All right. So now what gives you great optimism? We saw the spring game. Lucas Kroll looked fantastic, healthy. We know you got Addison, you got Wayne, you got Mack, Shockey Jock Louis. I mean, you got unbelievable weapons, plus 2-3 running backs. I mean, so the offensive line, I know your buddy Jimmy Morris, he's gone to the NFL.
Yeah.
So where's your concern? What is the point of emphasis once you get to practice?
I think just experience, right? I mean, there's still, like you said, you had a long list, but, a lot of those guys are young. We have some transfers. We have Melquise Stovall adding to it. A lot of guys that I haven't played with still. So I think, growing as a team and growing as an offense throughout camp, and, we'll be good to go come September 4th.
I know you get a look at the defense, too, and this is a team that when you talk about Pitt, you think about the defense and what you guys bring year in and year out. You lost a lot of talent last year, but you guys seem to always just re-rack and reload. What have you seen from those guys?
Yeah, like you said, a lot of talent, a lot of young guys that are still trying to figure out where they're going to fall on the depth chart, and I think that's the best thing that we could have is competition. We're deep. We're a lot deeper than I originally thought. Going through it with Coach Narduzzi yesterday, having a talk on the plane, and he was going through the depth chart on defense, and I think it's an impressive group that'll just continue to get better as the year goes.
All right, no Weaver, no Patrick Jones.
So is number five rolling in your grill a little bit during workouts? Is Alexander causing problems?
That's usually how it goes.
Kalijah Cansey? I mean, what we got? Sabathier causing problems?
Yeah, had a kick out Weave and Pat and you know, those other guys, you know, stepped up and I was became more friendly with them than I'd rather be. So I'm just happy I get to wear red. So I'm on the right team.
Kenny, we've talked a lot today about name, image, and likeness and kind of how the landscape of college football is changing, and especially for the quarterback position. A lot of you guys have a large voice in a lot of what's said and done. How have you kind of started to navigate that world now, and what's it been like for you?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, everyone goes about it a different way. You know, at first I just really want to get my teammates involved and have the offensive line involved, some receivers, you know, get Lucas involved as well down the road here. I think, you know, as long as we keep it team oriented and a lot of guys get opportunities, I think it'll be fine. You know, down the road, recruiting will get crazy. I'm happy I'm gone for that. I won't be a part of that. You know, good luck to all the young guys coming up and the recruiting process and having that added to the stress now on top of just finding a place to go play football. So, you know, I'm excited to see how it all pans out here in a few years.
All right, let's be honest. 36 career starts, the gray beard of football at the University of Pittsburgh to a degree. But, Kelsey, I got to be honest with you. Uh-huh. You know what he wanted to know earlier today?
What's that?
Does this count as a Packer in Durham appearance?
Oh, wow. You're trying to check off that bucket list, too, right?
That's the most important thing I'm going after is that one. So I know Pack's watching at home. If he signs off on it, then I'm glad this one will count.
Oh, that's it? You got to get his – I mean
– You already said yes. You already agreed. You signed off.
That's true. I did sign off. I said it counted.
That's right.
As the Mark Packer of the day, I guess I agree to that, too, if you guys have agreed to that.
Yes, yeah.
Mark's going to want you back, though. I know that. Mark's going to want you again.
It, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just going to let him go. If you got one more thing, you go.
I just can't imagine that you're not as excited about this season as any other year you've played, right? I mean, just the momentum you guys have playing for a guy like Pat. I mean, that momentum is real for this program, it feels like.
Yeah, I would say momentum. I would just say, you know, just having the experience that I have coming back, being able to teach some of the younger guys, just growing my leadership and having some older guys in the offense that can go with me. And, you know, I think, like, a lot of pieces are coming together that I haven't had throughout my career at the same time, and I feel like it's all coming together at the same time. Now it's our job to go do it.
Oh, great stuff with Kenny Pickett. 36 career starts, Roddy. It's hard to argue with his success.
It absolutely is. And three things from that interview that I pulled. Most importantly, number one, when you started off asking him if he's going to play more than three plays to start the season, it's going to be tough for him to do that, Wes, when they're starting with a bye. I mean, they've got UMass week one, so probably not. Very tough. Number two, as the Mark Packer stand-in today, I also vote that counts as a Packer in Durham appearance. Mark, hope you're better. When you get back, you can weigh in, give us the official ruling, but I vote that as well. Number three, and most seriously, I love that he wants to get his offensive linemen and receivers involved in NIL. That is one of those things that you hope quarterbacks continue to do as this thing goes forward.
All right. Good stuff with Kenny Pickett. Always fun to visit with him. And when we come back, another familiar face on the Packer in Durham program, David Teal, who writes for the Richmond Times-Dispatch, has a brand new article out at richmond.com this morning. With realignment returning to college sports, how will the ACC respond? What has David heard over the weekend that he can share with Packer and Durham next on ACC Network?
Packer and Durham. The Packer and Durham Podcast.
Halfway home on a Monday. Packer and Durham here on ACC Network. Roddy Jones is in for Mark today. David Teal here in moments. Andrea Adelson at 9:30. Top of the hour, the official Atlantic Coast Conference football preseason poll, of which Roddy and I both voted, and so did David Teal, who writes for the Richmond Times-Dispatch, who joins us this morning. You can log on to richmond.com this morning. Mr. Teal has already crafted his weekend prose, if you will, and it's titled, With Realignment Returning to College Sports, How Will the ACC Respond? That seems just as good a spot as any to start. So, David, how will the ACC respond?
I don't know. and guys, I don't think anyone does. I don't think Jim Phillips does. I don't think Vince Price or Jim Clements knows. There's so many moving parts here, and we know that surely the 10:05 rule is going to hit if not today, at some point this week, that the moment you guys are off the air, something's going to happen.
Yeah. I think somebody's waiting on Packer to get back before the 10:05 hits, though.
Okay. But really, absent Notre Dame, which is the obvious play and the preferred play for the Atlantic Coast Conference, I sense no consensus around any one team or teams where people are saying, this is who we must have, and this would help bridge that revenue gap that presumably will only grow if Texas and Oklahoma indeed go to the SEC, and with the Big Ten getting ready to do a mega TV deal in 2 years.
Yeah, that's what makes this whole thing fascinating for the ACC. Outside of Notre Dame, as you said, there's no obvious choice. So what is going to be the driver of this? Is it football success? How much does basketball play into it? Is it all about media markets? What's going to be the obvious driver as the ACC looks if they are indeed going to expand?
Right. I think the drivers are going to be a combination of media markets / money and football. And you look at the ACC's average distribution on the last tax filing, which was about $32.2 million. So any school that the ACC would add would have to bring at least that much additional revenue, but you would want to hopefully increase that per school distribution. So add $15 million on top of that just to add, say, $1 million to the average distribution, and you're up around $50 million. You're saying, okay, can school X account for $50 million additional dollars for the ACC to make it a worthwhile business transaction? And that's where you don't find, at least I don't, any consensus presently.
David, there are a couple of curious elements here. You know, Gene Corrigan had the great foresight in the early 90s to go get Florida State. You and I both know from a historical perspective, that was a really, really contentious room when Florida State was brought to the table as a potential member of the Atlantic Coast Conference. Things were contentious as well in the early 2000s when ultimately it became Virginia Tech, Boston College, and Miami, right? A little cleaner and a little clearer the last time with Louisville, Syracuse, Pittsburgh, and the what I like to call the IPO on Notre Dame, right? I mean, it was a little more cleaner. It was a little more clearer. There was only one or two bumps along the way, as I understand it.
That's correct. I mean, I lived the 2003 contentious was off the charts, and it got very political. And heck, you know, Virginia Tech was part of a group that was suing the ACC, and then it turned around, joined, and as well it should have, but you just never know how it's going to play out politically. But back then it was very public. Then come 2011 and 12 and beyond, the deals were done much more covertly.
All right, so
David, what do you expect Jim Phillips Wes, you go ahead. What do you expect Jim Phillips to have learned from those first iterations of realignment, David? What do you think Jim Phillips can pull from that in terms of takeaways and how to handle this?
Well, I know from talking to Commissioner Phillips, Roddy, that he has a pretty good feel for ACC history, and that's to his credit. Mm-hmm. He has had long, long meetings with John Swofford. I don't think there are any secrets there. I think Jim Phillips knows exactly how those expansions unwound. And here's where I think the ACC comes at it from a position of strength. And this is no knock on the gentleman now leading the Big Ten and the Pac-12. But the Big Ten hired from the NFL, and the Pac-12 hired from the entertainment industry. The ACC hired from the college athletics industry and found one of its most respected leaders in Jim Phillips at Northwestern, who in that position went through the Big Ten's most recent expansion in adding Maryland and Rutgers. Guys, I think that experience and that perspective will be invaluable in all this.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think the other thing, too, is some of the and some folks may or may not want to hear this. The ACC, outside of Corrigan's move to land Florida State in the early 90s, David, the ACC has been very deliberate in its talks about this. They've been, some would say, slow to burn. I think you can afford to be, you know, proactive here, but you can't afford to do it just to say you're doing it. You continue, I mean, as I said in the first hour, this league's got more top 50 media markets in its footprint than any other conference in the country. They know exactly what they're looking for here. They've got to just find the right fit, if you will.
Panicked moves rarely work out, Wes. And that goes in so many walks of life, and especially when it comes to conference realignment and expansion, because you're talking about long-term decisions that have ripple effects for decades. So absolutely the ACC would be wise to continue, you know, deliberate conversations about this, but yet it could in a way be proactive and not wait. So we'll see. I was watching your conversation with David Hale in regarding Notre Dame, and I agree wholeheartedly with him that the one thing that would move the Fighting Irish to join the league would be if they thought their playoff access was in some way going to be compromised. I think there's one other component. I think there's one other component to watch, and that is football scheduling. If in this wave of realignment, conferences become larger and play more games in their leagues, does that in any way affect Notre Dame's ability to schedule independently? And if that were to happen, then perhaps Notre Dame might think about conference membership for football.
Yeah, it's a great point. David, we've got the official preseason ACC poll coming up in a little over 15 minutes. How do you expect the poll to turn out, and how did you vote? Any surprises in the way that you did?
I don't think there are any surprises in the way I voted, guys. I voted North Carolina, Miami, 1-2 in the Coastal, and I voted Clemson, NC State, 1-2 in the Atlantic. Will it be exactly that with the consensus? I'm not sure, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised if that's the consensus. I saw where Roddy's all aboard the Miami bandwagon, and Mac Brown will be calling at 10:05 about that third place.
Yep.
But here's about this earlier in regards to the Coastal. Which team can avoid that? Just how did that happen? Result. I mean, you go back to last year. Carolina loses to a Florida State team that lost to Miami by 42, and then Carolina goes to Miami and wins by about 100. I mean, how does that all can any of those coastal teams just play up to its potential every week without these just wild fluctuations?
Yeah, that to me, and that's why, you know, and you may have heard this earlier in the show, Teal, I said October 16th kind of becomes the Coastal's D-Day, right? That's Carolina, Miami, and Pitt, Virginia Tech. And we can sit there and talk about those four schools and that day, and yet, you know, we all know this is the Coastal. I mean, Jeff Collins and David Cutcliffe and Bronco Mendenhall would probably like a word with me at 10:05 this morning, because, you know, I'm kind of walking off on three other schools that have shown the ability, needless to say, to get to Charlotte. However, there is something about the early season schedule, the Miami-Alabama, the Pitt at Tennessee, North Carolina-Virginia Tech, that does kind of give you some juice here about what this division might be by the time we get to mid-October.
Virginia's first ACC game, guys, is North Carolina. I mean, we're going to find pretty quickly about the Cavaliers, and you mentioned the Hokies hosting the Tar Heels week one. Let's not forget, a couple weeks later, the Hokies are going to Morgantown. So we're going to know a lot about some of these coastal teams in September.
Yeah.
Yeah, we absolutely are. You're exactly right. On the Atlantic side, you mentioned Clemson, NC State 1-2. Who did you have after that? How did you see the Louisville, Boston College, Wake Forest, Florida State? How did you see that shaking out after that?
I picked Wake Forest third, although the Deacons' recent injury news admittedly gives me pause. That's a big hit for Wake on both sides of the ball. And guys, I saw it, again, you were talking to David about most surprising team. I think I undervalued Florida State. I picked the Noles. I don't know if it was fifth or sixth. I'm trying to recall. I think it might have even been sixth. But if they get buy-in in production from all those grad transfers that they have coming in from big programs, Seminoles could turn it around pretty quickly.
All right. You mentioned the Donovan Green, Javonte Nash injuries. Green, one of the better wide receivers that Sam Hartman has. Nash, one of those guys that Lyle Hempel, we know, was counting on defensively as well for the Deacons. David, the official poll is at 9 o'clock. Mac Brown's phone call to Roddy is at 10:05, and we're looking forward to that. Thank you, as always. Appreciate it.
Gentlemen, my pleasure.
All right. David Teal, you can read his work online at richmond.com. Don't forget, the Huddle has a preview. They're going to do each division. They're going to do an overall comprehensive prediction show, and it's all this week. Wednesday night, the Atlantic starts at 8 o'clock. Thursday night, they'll do the Coastal, and then Friday, season predictions, 8 o'clock, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, with Jordan Cornett, EJ Manuel, Coach Rick, and EMAC all set up and ready to go. The Huddle right here on ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app. When we come back, there are Atlantic storylines. There are some Atlantic questions. Big Cinco made quite an impression last week, but Roddy's got a surprise in the Atlantic. And we'll talk to old number 20 about what that is next on Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
All right, 15 minutes away from the official, actually less than that, about 8 minutes away from the official ACC preseason poll. And then Andrea Adelson in the 9 o'clock hour as well, at about 9:30, and we'll get her reaction to the poll and the way she voted as well. Let's go to the Atlantic. Look, Clemson is going to be the favorite in the Atlantic, and until proven otherwise, Roddy, they got enough street cred, they ought to be the favorite. Tigers are deep, they're talented, yeah. They've been to the college football playoff, they've won national championships, understand that. But while Clemson's looking for a seventh straight title here, what is your storyline behind the Tigers as we get ready to see this poll at the top of the hour?
Well, I think the storyline is NC State, first and foremost. I mean, NC State's got a really good football team. I think Florida State is a really good storyline because, as David Teal said, I undervalued Florida State in mine just because I didn't know what to do with Florida State, to be completely honest with you. So I stuck them after everybody that I knew was going to be pretty good. But I think Florida State has an opportunity to jump in there. And then there's sort of the dynamic of Boston College, can they repeat and get better? And then Louisville, can they bounce back? I think it's fascinating. I really do, because like the Coastal, after Clemson, there are a lot of really good teams, and how does it shake out is going to be a really, really big question.
Yeah, I think NC State deserves a lot of the preseason momentum because of the depth, and in particular, competitive depth. And let's be honest, Roddy, you and I saw it in the spring game. I mean, they had a lot of guys that did not play in the spring and still showcased you guys that could go make plays. I mean, the Porter Rooks, the Devin Carters. I mean, you know, we didn't even see Bam Knight. Didn't have to. Jordan Houston looked great. I think they've found some answers and some combinations in the offensive line. Defensively, yeah, Liam McNeil going pro is a that's a difference maker. But I saw players all over the field, and Peyton Wilson didn't even play either in the spring game, for that matter.
Yeah, I think you look at them offensively, the amount that they have coming back on the offensive line, the receivers that you talked about, the running backs as well. And then you're really adding Devin Leary. I mean, this was a guy that didn't play for most of the last season because of COVID at the beginning and then the ankle injury later on, the leg injury later on. So adding a guy like Devin Leary, who on the biggest stage in the tightest game last year really performed well, I think is huge. And this team performed well, winning a bunch of close games. So I really like NC State. As you said, competitive depth. They've got some transfers coming in that'll help too.
Just because I want to light the fuse here before we get the poll. Here's Roddy's Atlantic preseason poll, by the way. Clemson first. Okay.
You go straight to
NC
mine.
NC State
you
second.
You went straight to mine.
Wake third. Louisville, BC, Florida State, Syracuse is kind of the order there.
Yeah, and had the Wake injuries come out before we voted on this, I may have flipped Wake and Louisville. I really like Louisville. I do, because as David Hale said, there's a lot of luck involved with their lack of success last year. Florida State, I think I undervalued again because I just didn't know what to do with them. Boston College, you know, I'm going to have to see it defensively, but obviously up at the top, Clemson, NC State, that's where it starts because those two teams should be really good on paper, particularly Clemson. I mean, we don't talk enough about them when we do these things. They are one of the best teams in the country, obviously, and that defense should be a top five defense in this country.
All right, I want to keep harmony in the booth this fall, so here's mine, Roddy. Clemson, State, I got BC third. Wake Forest, four. Florida State, Wake, and Louisville. Again, those three right there, I'm kind of waiting to see, right? I mean, it's just kind of one of those weird deals. Syracuse, yeah.
We're going to have to call E. Wood and have him escort us into Louisville after this, Wes.
All right. ACC preseason poll is coming up next. We'll give you the official preseason poll right after this. Is Carolina number one in the Coastal? We suspect Clemson's number one in the Atlantic. How's the rest of it play out? We'll tell you next on Packer and Durham's Power Hour.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.